Welcome in to the Wrestling Brethren Podcast. This is episode 392. Tonight we will be talking about wrestling news, tonight's SmackDown episode, and we will make our predictions for AEW Dance Dance Revolution. With me tonight is Seth Zillman. Jared is stuck at work, but we will get his picks offline before the show starts on Sunday. So Seth, how the hell are you?
I know earlier today, The Rock put a promo up on Twitter, and I think even by his standards, it's like an all-time great. I'm sure we'll mention at least a little bit about that, but very big weekend and a lot of fun to come tonight.
So starting with the news, there was a report from Brian Alvarez on Wrestling Observer Live that there is frustrated AEW talent that refused to execute Tony Khan's creative. And this from Brian Alvarez, and I quote, "I don't want to compare this to WWE back in the day, but it is very, very much like that. And a lot of people are very frustrated because they don't find out until the Tuesday before of what they're doing. Some people do, and some people will know what they're doing because there are a couple of matches usually advertised in advance. But most people are showing up the day of the show and finding out if they are doing anything or not. There's very little communication. I hear about it all the time. Some people don't want to do something, and Tony doesn't force them. There's a constant struggle of, will this person agree? And if not, what's the alternative? Can we find a solution? The process of putting together these shows is filled with a lot of frustration." End quote. So this sounds like a whole bunch of, as he mentioned, old WWE stuff under Vince's regime when the scripts would get ripped up with 5 minutes before airtime. Only this is not script ripping. This is, yeah, I don't want to do that, and you haven't talked to me, so why should I care?
Well, that is something I guess I can kind of see both sides of. Obviously, neither one of us work in the wrestling business, probably never will, but I would imagine there's always going to be a measure of people who are going to want more say in what they do. And I think we've said for a while, I don't know how much of it Tony Khan does himself these days, but I mean, if he is truly the only guy writing the shows, that could be a lot of burnout that could be going on. And there's the old saying, if you try to make everybody happy, you're not going to make everybody happy. You can't keep everybody happy all the time. I don't know who's the good and the bad in this, but I think it also explains why sometimes we'll see something happen and then it doesn't get followed up on. How many times have we seen where there'll be a turn or something goes on, and then we're waiting to see what the next step is in the story, and we don't get one. We don't get the next chapter. So maybe that's kind of what's been going on. I would only assume that's the case. And I really don't want to compare it to WCW, because it sounds like this is still like not even head and shoulders, probably head, shoulders, like under your knees, better than what WCW was like back in the day when, you know, the inmates were running the asylum, because in the end, things stop with the Khan family. Yeah. So I don't know how long this has been going on, but hopefully it's something that will get worked out that will keep as many of the people happy as possible.
And in a corresponding news item, Miro responds to Tony Khan's statement from the Revolution conference call and also makes it sound like Tony doesn't communicate with his wrestlers about their injury status. Because somebody who was on the conference call tweeted that Tony Khan confirmed that Miro and Keith Lee were supposed to be in the Meat Madness match before it got canceled, as they're both unavailable at this time. Miro responded to that tweet and said, "I've been injured since September and I got medical attention in January. Sorry he wasn't aware of it." So if Tony doesn't even know the injury status of his wrestlers and he books them in a match and then has to cancel the match because, oops, I forgot they're injured.
Yeah, that's pretty weird no matter which way you cut it.
It's like, dude, if you're not going to get some bookers to help you, at least get some personal assistance. Shit.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last news item, we have an update on SummerSlam per WrestleVotes on Twitter. SummerSlam 2024 has been rumored for Cleveland, as Sean Ross Sapp hinted months ago. I'm told that through sources, WWE is close to finalizing a deal with Cleveland Browns Stadium to host the event on Saturday, August 3rd. Formal announcement should come in April.
Well, since I've been to Cleveland, that would have been my guess, as it would be the stadium where the Browns play. And it'll be nice to see the Browns stadium with actual fans in attendance, because I'm pretty sure they don't go for Browns games. I don't follow football, and even I know that. So
it's another outdoor venue, but at least this will be August, so mm-hmm. not Philadelphia in April, which I'm still interested to see how that goes down.
Yeah.
All right, SmackDown. We're going to keep this more brief than usual because of our predictions to make. And you mentioned the Rock's 21-minute social media promo, which I thought was phenomenal, as you alluded to. And the funny thing is, I had said the reason he did it that way is because there was no way he was going to get 21 minutes on SmackDown.
Yeah.
And that's because they gave him 40. The Bloodline and Rock segment was the first 40 minutes of the show, and I couldn't believe it.
Oh, so it's almost going back to the Attitude Era when they'd have those half hour opening promo segments. But
yeah, I was, who do you think you are?
It wasn't
Triple
the cookie
H?
Cutter. Yeah. And I still remember, I'll be very brief with this, but I remember back in the message board days when one of the posters that we knew from there was talking about how he stopped watching WWE because he got tired of every episode opening up with Triple H with the belt talking about how great he was. 2 years later, he said, I tune into Raw for the first time in 2 years, and what do I see? Triple H with the belt talking about how great he was.
So Roman's a little perturbed to start off this segment because Glendale, Arizona won't acknowledge him. Gives him three different chances, even calling them Phoenix, Arizona the second time around. And this mm-hmm. crowd was a little more pro-Rock than usual. They were chanting Rocky, Rocky, Rocky instead of Rocky Sucks. And I was noticing some of the signs. There was a Die, Rocky, Die sign. Mm-hmm. Paul introduces The Rock, and The Rock comes out, and I'm not going to spend 40 minutes going over all his catchphrases and city-based promos that he did.
Yeah. Neither one of us would do it justice anyway.
Yeah, exactly. He basically called Glendale and Phoenix, Arizona, the number one city in America for crack cocaine. So mm-hmm. heel Rock, everybody. Basically, the gist of this was he addressed Cody's challenge for a one-on-one match, saying that nobody just goes to get The Rock one-on-one, and they have a counteroffer. And the counteroffer is what we thought was going to happen all along, except they introduced some stipulations that we didn't really think of. But The Rock did challenge Cody and Seth to take on The Rock and Roman Reigns on night one of WrestleMania. And The Rock said, if Cody wins, or if Cody and Seth wins, you will get your chance to finish your story one-on-one night two with Roman Reigns with no Bloodline involvement. There will be no Solo, no Jimmy, no Wise Man, no Rock, Bloodline barred from the ring. And he says, however, when the Bloodline wins, then it's Bloodline rules on night two. If Jimmy wants to you know, interfere, he can. If Paul wants to introduce a foreign object, he could. If Solo wants to sing the national anthem, then he will. And if The Rock wants to pull up a chair and sit next to his boy, Pat McAfee, and call the match, he'll do that too. And just at the same time, he'll pull up that chair and smack Cody in the head with it. So this pretty much telegraphs that the Bloodline will win night one, and it's going to be Bloodline rules on night two of WrestleMania. Because if you're going to have the babyface finish his story, you might as well stack the deck against him.
It'll be WrestleMania sold out. You know, sold out like the NWO pay-per-view.
Yeah, exactly. So that was that segment, except I do want to touch on the end of the segment, which I love the introduction of the drama, and it's still planting some seeds that I will tie into The Rock's 21-minute promo on social media. If this ends up that The Rock turns on Roman, and this was The Rock and Cody in cahoots as babyfaces this entire time, this might go down as the best angle of all time, if that's where this is heading.
Yeah, because that would be logical as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And we'd finally have smart baby faces for a change. The Rock goes to end the segment by saying, "If you smell," but just as he hits smell, Roman puts his hand on The Rock's mic arm and stops him from finishing it. And he gets a mic from Paul and he says, "I need something from you." He goes, "I'll do anything for family, but I need one thing from you." He goes, "I need you to acknowledge me." And The Rock takes off his sunglasses and he says, "I acknowledge you, Roman Reigns, as my tribal chief." And the crowd starts booing and chanting, "You sold out, you sold out." And The Rock goes, "Let me explain something to you idiots. This is family. You do anything for family." And all I'm thinking of is they had to have introduced that family tree for a reason at the press mm-hmm. conference. And on that family tree, The Rock is listed as High Chief Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So he may mm-hmm. acknowledge Roman and say, "Well, sure, you're my tribal chief, but in April, I'm your high chief, bitch," or something to that effect. It's right. as we've said for a lot of this Bloodline stuff, it's all right there. It literally writes itself. So I'm glad we got story advancement on this night. The only swerve, so to speak, was that they said that Cody would appear on this SmackDown, and he did not.
That's not the first time they've advertised somebody that hasn't shown up. So.
Right. They did invite him and Seth to come to Dallas, Texas next week on SmackDown to answer the challenge. So, and Seth was already advertised to be on that SmackDown. So we will get some more advancement next week.
I'll just add that I have the same opinion of the SmackDown that I did about Raw. There was a lot of talking, but this is building towards Mania. This is like the kind of the first act of the final build to WrestleMania. So I'm cool with the amount of talking they've been doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll let it slide on the road to WrestleMania mm-hmm. because one of the things we did with our WrestleMania predictions last year was we gave letter grades to how we thought the build was. And in order to build, you need talking segments. So yeah, we'll mm-hmm. let it slide on the road to WrestleMania. And as I ended up reading that this 40-minute segment ran long, go figure, and they had mm-hmm. to make some adjustments on the fly for the rest of the show. Other highlights, Tiffany Stratton continues her winning ways since joining the Blue Brand, and she defeats Naomi. Bayley and Dakota Kai took on the Kabuki Warriors, and this featured something that we called many, many weeks ago, This was the most predictable Dakota Kai heel turn since the last predictable Dakota Kai heel turn.
Or she turned from heel to heel.
Yeah, exactly. She betrayed a friend. No. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Paging Tegan Knox, paging Raquel Rodriguez. They will tell you. Bron Breakker defeated Zion Quinn in less than 10 seconds. The bell rang, spear, 1, 2, 3, bell rang again. But
yeah. They keep doing that. He's going to be over like Rover.
Yeah. That wasn't even the news of the match. The news of the match was his opponent was Zion Quinn. This is the first time he was on TV since being drafted to Raw a year and a half ago.
He's on SmackDown?
I wasn't even sure he existed still. But he's listed on the WWE roster as one of those quote-unquote free agents that can go anywhere. And well, yeah, but he hasn't been on TV. Now all we need is an Odyssey Jones sighting, and it would be like the complete set. In the street fight, Carlito defeated Santos Escobar with the return of Rey Mysterio on this night. And the LWO goes over on this matchup. I will just say quickly, because it really didn't have a bearing on anything, the main event was Randy Orton defeated Austin Theory. That was that. This Sunday, March the 3rd, AEW is putting on Revolution, and we will predict the matches that we have so far. Tony loves to throw on matches, maybe even though it was a taped show, maybe they'll throw something in on Collision. Maybe they'll announce the 0 hour matches. We don't know any of that stuff because it's Friday night. So we're going to predict what we have. And we will start with the match that is replacing the Meat Madness match. Of course, you know, what's a new match announcement with zero rules announced with it? So we have no idea what this is. Could be a gauntlet, could be a battle royal. We don't know. But it's called the All-Star Scramble Match. And it features Chris Jericho versus Powerhouse Hobbs versus Lance Archer versus Wardlow versus Hook versus Brian Cage versus Dante Martin and versus CMLL's Magnus, which is not the Magnus that was in TNA, who is now Nick Aldis on SmackDown. Not the same person.
Right. All that, and I would have to say Partridge in a Pear Tree. So I'm assuming that's probably just one of those where it's everybody in at once. Because usually traditionally in scramble matches, it's like a mayhem thing. And, you know, it might be multi-teams just in at the same time. But does it look like it's every man for himself? So I'm guessing with the story that they've been telling with the Undisputed Kingdom and Wardlow and such, that I think Wardlow's probably going to win the match. We'll see how long he hangs on to that title shot before actually cashing in on it.
Well, I don't think there's been any announcement of a title shot tied to this match, or if it has, I haven't seen it. Okay. But again, it wouldn't surprise me because Tony loves throwing things at the last minute. But either way, I'm going to complete the trifecta. Oh, wait, there's no trifecta.
Bifecta.
I'm going to agree with Seth. How's that?
Yeah.
If Wardlow's in this, and based on his promo last week or this week or whatever it was, it's, as he used to say as a babyface, it's Wardlow's world. So, yeah, Wardlow to win, whatever this turns out to be. In a tag team match, FTR takes on the Blackpool Combat Club of Claudio and Mox.
Well, the easy joke is who wins, the fans, because I don't think anybody would complain about either of the teams winning this. So I think it's a flip of the coin, but I am going to go with FTR.
And I will not agree with Seth this time. I will pick Blackpool Combat Club mainly because they have the momentum and FTR kind of had their year in 2022. And I don't know really what they're doing with them now. They do trios matches. They do eight-man tags. They really haven't focused on them as a tag team, at least not this year. So, yeah, just to continue with the BCC momentum, I will go with Claudio and Mox. In a singles match that will likely steal the show, at least wrestling-wise, Takeshita takes on Will Ospreay.
I think we see this storyline coming as well. I think they've even teased at it that Ospreay is going to split from the Don Callis family. So I'm going to go with Takeshita winning. I think what's going to happen is they'll notice that Ospreay is like trying to actually be a good wrestler and not cheat and such. Or it'll be some outside factor. And I think he'll get turned on, but I'm picking Takeshita to win.
And I will go with Will Ospreay to win, but I do agree he's going to catch a beatdown after the match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, either way.
For the AEW International title, Orange Cassidy defends against Undisputed Kingdom's Roderick Strong.
This is another one where you can make the argument either way. I think we're probably going to have some heel-heavy storylines right now, so I'm thinking Roderick Strong actually wins the title here. Probably not cleanly, but yeah, I think he wins the title.
I will agree with Seth on this one. They've continued the thing of Orange defending pretty much on almost every show, so his fallback is that he's exhausted or banged up or whatever, and somebody just eventually got the better of him. But yeah, if this match was the first Revolution match booked way back in January, well, I say that, but it's only last month, but this is going to be Roderick Strong's to win, and then it'll just give the Undisputed Kingdom more stuff to brag about.
Mm-hmm.
For the AEW women's title, Timeless Toni Storm defends against former best friend Deonna Purrazzo.
Again, logical arguments either way as far as the story, but I think given how things are going right now, first match between the two, conventional logic would show or would tend to go with the heel winning the first time around, probably by cheating, especially since she's going to have lackeys with her. So I'm predicting Toni Storm to retain.
I too am picking Timeless Toni to retain, mainly because she's just too damn good and doesn't need to drop the title right now. And I'm not always a fan of bringing in somebody from another company and they get thrown right into a title picture.
Yeah.
Nothing against Deonna.
Don't want to do that too much.
Yeah, nothing against Deonna, but I just don't like people debuting, demanding a title shot, and then getting one. For the AEW Continental Crown title, Eddie Kingston defends against Bryan Danielson.
I know I've been talking about the heel-heavy wins tonight, but this is not one of those. I am actually predicting Kingston to retain. I think now this may be the match of the night. There's going to be a lot of good matches tonight, but this one actually truly could be match of the night. They might steal it from Will Ospreay and Takeshita, who may steal it from FTR and BCC, and they may have stolen it from the main event. I don't know. A lot of spotlight stealing tonight.
Well, I don't know that the main event, and we'll get there in a few minutes, but I don't know that the main event is going to steal anything in terms of a wrestling in-ring product, but it'll definitely be high on emotion, drama, and other things. But before we can get there, We have for the AEW TNT title, Christian Cage defends against Daniel Garcia.
I think this one's pretty straight up. I mean, Christian's doing some of the best work of his career right now, and I don't say that lightly. Again, he's got the dog and pony show with him. Daniel Garcia is going to give it a hell of a fight, but I think Cage is winning. Whether we get the returning Adam Copeland or not, I'm not sure. But I think Christian's keeping the title, and Daniel Garcia will fight another day.
Dog and pony show. That is no way to talk about Mama Wayne. Mm-hmm. But I digress. Yes, I too am picking Christian to retain. This is his show, not the pay-per-view. I'm just saying it's his performance is outstanding. And it's time that you reward excellent work with excellent results. And he's probably not going to drop the title until it's back to Adam Copeland again.
Yeah, yeah. But again, storyline shows that Adam should be the one that wins.
Right. In what will probably be the penultimate match on this pay-per-view for the AEW World title, Samoa Joe defends against Hangman Adam Page and against Swerve Strickland.
I think there's, again, a logical argument for either guy winning this match or any of the three. I think the real hot button, of course, is Swerve and Hangman, and they've effectively done a double turn. Hangman's the bad guy now. So in the end, I'm going to go with Joe retaining. I guess this probably wouldn't be part of the actual points, but I think it's Hangman's going to be so consumed with keeping Swerve from getting the title that he's willing to let Joe win if it means Swerve not getting the title, if that makes any sense. You know, he's become Captain Ahab, basically.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think it's too early to take the title off of Joe, even though I could definitely...
Another guy doing some of the best work of his career.
Yeah, I could see Swerve winning it before the calendar year is over, but we're only in March. So, yeah, Joe to retain, if nothing else, so that Jarrett can see Samoa Joe as world champion when they come to Winnipeg on May 1st. And in the main event... This has already been confirmed as the main event, and probably as it should be. Mm-hmm. In Sting's final match for the AEW Tag Team titles, in or Tornado Tag Match, which I believe just means all four can be in the ring at the same time.
That's exactly what that means, yes.
Yeah. Sting and Darby Allin defend... against Matthew and Nicholas Jackson.
And this one, I think, given the story that's been told, and especially if this is the main event of the show, the only acceptable outcome is the good guys winning. I mean, I know I've been heel heavy in all my calls here. I think Sting and Darby should win this. Yes, it means Sting retires the champion and retires undefeated in AEW. And somebody will bitch and moan about putting over people or whatnot. I mean, I'd argue that Darby's the one that's ultimately gotten put over in these last couple of years. Since there's not going to be a blow-off to this, effectively this would be the blow-off, I think the good guys should win. And, it will just be one of the times when the hero can triumphantly ride off into the sunset instead of losing on their way out. So I'm all for that. I'm assuming this would mean that they would then surrender the tag titles, you know, i.e. declare them vacant, or maybe Darby can pick a partner or something like that. Personally, I would rather they just go with new champions or interim champions or something like that. They can spend a few weeks doing a tag tournament, but I think Sting and Darby should win here. Definitely.
Well, I almost,
you can disagree. That's fine.
I almost don't know what to do here because there's logic on both sides. What I did find interesting, and I wish I would have screen capped it for this exact moment, and I forgot to, and now, of course, I can't find it. But somebody asked Sting about being undefeated in AEW, and he said something about there's nothing wrong with losing or taking a loss, and in fact, sometimes it's better to help put somebody over when you do lose. And because of that quote, and because of what I, and because of my personal preference not to have another title in flux, and even though I really don't care for the smarmy Matthew and Nicholas characters that they've been using and curating, them as heel champions just does a lot and creates a lot of opportunity for some babyface tag teams to enter the picture. So I am picking Matthew and Nicholas to win the tag team titles in the main event, but for the sake of sending the crowd home happy, I think while they are bragging and showboating that they won and everything, I think Sting recovers and there's a beatdown and slow-mo Ric Flair will get in some shots and maybe there'll be some other surprises because it's rumored that Lex Luger might be here for his final match. Some other people from Sting's past might be here for this final match. So you never know. But for my peace of mind, I would rather the titles go to the active competitors.
The only thing I will add is what I really don't want to see, because I can't help but think this is what the Russo-like logic would be. Would be to have Darby turn on Sting at the finish of the match. That would be like the dumbest thing they could possibly think of doing.
Yeah. And it goes, it goes completely against Darby's character. So mark it down.
You ever noticed that the Young Bucks somehow managed to have different forms of facial hair every week? One week they got a mustache and they got full beards. Then they got goatees. Then they're back to a mustache again.
Oh, they're EVPs. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah. And apparently that includes growing facial hair very quickly.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say.
It's the Chia Bucks.
The last thing I'll say about the Bucks is, if you haven't caught it, not only did they rename the one move to the, instead of the BTE trigger, they renamed it the EVP trigger. But they've also renamed the Meltzer driver to the Tony Khan driver. So, yay for heel heat. So, that is Revolution. As I said, we'll get Jarrett's picks locked in before the pay-per-view starts on Sunday. I'll probably speak with him tomorrow. And I will probably tweet out those predictions so that everything is on the up and up. And we will be here Sunday night to do a post-show and see how it all shook out. So until then, once again, thank you for listening, downloading, and subscribing, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode. You can subscribe to the Wrestling Brethren podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix to hear the latest discussion from the Wrestling Brethren. Visit the mothership, if you will, at twbpodcast.com, the online home of the Wrestling Brethren podcast. Let us know your thoughts, questions, and comments on Twitter /X at twbpshow, on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthesquaredcircle, and on Instagram at the Wrestling Brethren. You can follow Jarrett on Twitter /X at TheBaconRev. You can follow Seth at LordZandrax. And you can follow Josh at SouthpawJosh. Thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you soon with more from the Wrestling Brethren.